Hello, everybody. Code Pen Radio 416, I believe. Yes, wow. wave to the people, Stephen.
Hello, video viewers and audio viewers.
I don't know how many video viewers we get. If you didn't know, it's on YouTube. I don't know. I like audio podcasts too, but hey, we get the video anyway, and our editor Chris Enns over at Lemon Productions helps us kick out that video thing too, and why not? You know, why not?
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, if we share our screen once in a while, we'll keep it brief. We did it the other week and it worked out nicely. This week we're talking about we use at CodePen React and Next.js. Pretty common tools in the old world today. Nobody ever got fired for picking React. That's what they say. That's the old thing. No huge regrets from my angle. That's not really what we're talking about, but we are talking about kind of keeping up with the Joneses or whatever they say. That when we started with React, who knows what the very first version of React we put into CodePen was? 15? I don't know. Or maybe it was before they even got that high. I don't even know. But every time React upgrades, we ask ourselves, like, okay, when are we going to do it? Are we going to do it? Do we need to do it? What's the pain points? All that. And upgrading React is a separate but related concern to upgrading Next.js. In fact, not everything on CodePen is Next. There's a little bit of React. Maybe not even a little bit, because the editor itself uses some React, but is not Next yet. As we get into 2.0, a lot more of the site is in Next. And I, frankly, would love to keep going on that. Like, the more that's in there, the more modern of a system we're using and whatever. That will continue to evolve over time. We're not really here to evaluate our choice here. We're talking about upgrading. Why do we do it? When do we do it? What do we think about when we do it? What's painful when we do it? And all that stuff. And this week, I guess, Next 16 dropped, and it looked like a good time to be like, well, maybe we'll just stay on top of it, because the last two updates we did were much, I don't know, I shouldn't say much more painful than this one, because this one's not even done yet. But it's like, I don't know, like, it feels good to stay on top of it, because the longer it goes, the worse it can be, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's there's many reasons that we need to stay up to date overall with client side stuff like React. We want to stay compatible with different libraries. We want to be able to access the latest docs and resources. Like, that's huge. If you're on an outdated version and you're trying to find information, you're almost always gonna run into some hiccups there.
We could bitch at Vercel for this one, y'all. Which version of, I think we were on React 17 when 18 was out, and their docs made it just impossible to look at the 17. Or no, it wasn't. It was 14 and 15 or whatever.
Yeah, it was next 14 and next 15. And they didn't have like the little version switcher or anything like that. I think they had like a hidden URL that you could access the docs at.
But and it was some so... like just Vercel deployment URL. Yeah, and I think when we needed to reference them, we found it most useful to like go to the GitHub repo for the docs and like find an old branch or something.
Right. Yeah. The tags and GitHub, you could access one
Talk
of the 14
about a forcing
ones.
Function. I thought it was like quite rude, really. I'm sure they had their reasons for it or whatever, but it was like, part of the big impetus for getting on Next 15 was just so that we could read the docs.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. Anyway, before that though. Okay. So I don't know, paint a moment of a particular point in time for us and when we decided to do what.
Well, yeah. So I think for Next, we were actually like on 12 or 13 for a long while, and like 14 came out and then 15 came out. We needed to get up to date with it.
Oh man, so, we went from 12 to 15.
I don't know that we went directly from 12 to 15, but I think we started stepping our way. But we were stuck on one version for a while, because with something server side like Next, you've there's deployment and all kinds of stuff. And Chris, you and I are the front end guys, and so it's easy for us to update an NPM package. But when it comes time to actually get that Next site deployed and out on the server and working and everything, most of the time we're going to hit a wall if there's any kind of problem. and we don't want to take up DevOps
time. Yeah, sometimes we can struggle our way through it because it's like GitHub Actions we use and stuff. And sometimes right. For example, if the command changes for what needs to be built, that's got to be reflected in those GitHub Actions files. And that's not our forte, let's say. I don't know if it's anybody's forte. I think people just struggle their way through it. But yeah, maybe us. And they're not particularly easy to replicate locally and all that stuff. But yeah, you bring up that server-side stuff and that deployment stuff. That's a very important reason for doing this at all, too. That's like somehow less clear because it feels like a client-side library, but it really isn't. Or it's both. You know, right. Like it's server side too. And people don't blink an eye about updating WordPress. Everybody's like, obviously you need to upgrade WordPress. And you upgrade it sometimes for the new features, but most people are like, look at the new feature set of WordPress with a little bit of a shrug, I hate to say. But nobody's like dying for the new features of WordPress. What they do it for is because they're like, if I don't, I'm hacked, you know?
Right. Yeah, the security is such a huge factor with these. And, you know, whenever they're releasing a new version of Next, they're also updating the dependencies in there. So there's a whole lot of little things that could ultimately compromise the site if you're just running an old version.
Yep. So at one point, Next 15 was a big upgrade for us. That's the one that's famously split the router. So it's no longer, it supports what they call the pages router, which is also maps to just a folder called pages. And that used to be just where you put all your stuff. And that's how routing worked. And somebody had some genius idea to make an app router, which I'm probably not even prepared to really explain all the intricacies and differences. But now there's both. There's a app folder and a pages folder, and they sort of overlap each other and you can support them both at the same time. I think app router was like, it's like server side rendered first, and I'm sure it has some right. advantages or something, but for poor old us, it's like, ugh.
Yeah. So okay. it is a lot more server side first, and they've like adjusted the way like metadata works and like how you tap into the router and like all these kinds of things, which if you're starting from scratch, I'm sure
fine.
It's a little bit easier to get into. And we did kind of do that with the embed pages. We kind of wrote those all from scratch in the app router.
Yeah, you'd think, oh, now that we have the app router, anything that we do new, we should just do in the app router and figure it out. And anything that's existing, we'll slowly convert it over time as we can. I don't think that's really played out quite like that. Sometimes we still do new stuff in the pages router just because it's like, I don't know. Not just for familiarity. I can't remember all the reasons.
Well,
but
so we have like our Apollo setup, and we have like an actual like server side rendering setup in the pages router for Apollo pages. And so we haven't migrated that to the app router yet. And so that's kind of been the limiting. But with embeds, we talked about
we don't use Apollo.
Right, we're using Urkel, so it's just able to be kind of its own
gosh.
Thing.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, there's app router versus pages. So we really wanted to get on Next 15 because, like I said, that's what the current docs were on much better. App router did seem to have a lot of advantages. Of course, we care about SSR because we care about SEO, we care about speed, we care about accessibility, all these things. So we got on Next 15, but before we could do it, Next 15 required React 19, right? And these are different concepts. Your version of React and Next don't have to move perfectly in sync, but there are like dependencies and stuff. And we were not on React 19. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, we had to kind of prepare for this. I remember we were looking when Next 15 was coming out, or it, you know, they had some of the like stable betas, and it was talking about React 19. And I think it's completely required in Next 15. And so we had to take a look. And
was it because of the server side components or whatever they call those in React? I bet it is.
Right. I think so. And they, at least from 17 to 18, they changed like some of the React DOM APIs and like all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So you really had to make sure you were using the latest for that. So for React 19, There were a few things that were kind of hurdles with that. They dropped prop types support and which isn't that bad. Like, you know, if it's there, it can stay there, but it won't be used, and that's fine. It can still inform.
Oh, it didn't error or whatever.
I think they started throwing warnings in React 19 about it.
So they were like deprecated, but not, they didn't kill the API or something?
Right. It just doesn't actually do anything anymore in React 19. But we mainly used them for like client, for editor hints, you know? So like when you're looking at a particular component, you can see what the props are for it.
Yeah, pretty much. Because, but it did do client side checking of, to make sure that, well, that's the point, that the prop was the type that you expected it to be. I remember that because I probably put in 90% of the prop types. At one point, I just like, or I don't know if that's fair, but I do remember putting in a lot of prop types because at one point we were pretty hot on the idea of like, oh, look at it. It's type checking, but like at the client side level, whereas like even TypeScript can't really do that because by the time TypeScript hits the client, it's already been processed down into JavaScript. And theoretically, it's catching these type of type problems before that even matters. Theoretically, if your entire app was all TypeScript, you client-side type checking wouldn't matter because it's been so tight. But that's a part of this story, is that we're not 100% TypeScript yet. Why wouldn't you? Yeah. What are we now? 80? Well, I don't know.
Notably, we didn't use TypeScript for the longest time, and then Robert came on the team and started kind of waving the banner for that.
Yeah.
Well, fortunately, he did the bulk of the work getting that actually implemented, and you know, working from in like our dev environment and compiling and all that.
Next is very happy to be in TypeScript. It's probably preferred. Although just writing React in general in TypeScript does kind of sucks sometimes, you know?
Yeah,
not the most fun, but hey, it's in there. And because we're not like a tight ship with TypeScript, it's not 100% there yet. Prop types did still have some value, so it does feel a little weird ripping them out, but usually we rip them out and convert to TypeScript too. But I generally find that to be satisfying work, but it's tricky because it's not useful. Like, nobody's paying us any more money. The client app isn't any better, you know. It can be just
zero benefit.
Almost zero.
Maybe when you're developing and you like import that component, you get slightly better type hinting.
Yeah, but we could say slightly better DX, and who knows, maybe we prevented a bug from shipping at one point or something. Who knows?
Yeah. But most of the time, like the actual errors that the type checking would help with happen like on the client, because this is client side code. So, you know, anything actually happening on the client, TypeScript's not gonna catch. It's just, in theory, the types will be caught when you're writing the code.
Yes. And to anybody confused about that, that's kind of where apps like Zod come in, is when it's like client, definitely client side stuff, and maybe even coming in from unknown sources and stuff, like checking that data is of the right type and is validated on the client. TypeScript can't do that. So that's what stuff like Zod is for.
Yeah.
Interesting. They try to help you React sometimes, don't they? They're like, oh, we'll write a CLI tool that you just ship code your whole code through, and we'll fix your stuff. And what I'm thinking of, what am I thinking of? What was the really annoying one? I was thinking maybe more in Next than React, but Next got rid of changed how their link component worked, which I found highly obnoxious. Yes.
Yeah.
But they said, we'll do a code mod and we'll just the whoop
pass
it in there
for href stuff and like legacy behavior props on those.
Yeah. Yeah. Not my favorite.
No. And React offered some code mods for going from 18 to 19. That like some of it was supposed to convert prop types to TypeScript types. And some of it was okay, but like trying to run it on our entire code base was a bit of a problem. If you had a smaller app.
We're just too big for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And we have, we have like our Rails side of things that's still legacy, and we can't actually write TypeScript in that section of the app.
Right.
And I can't remember if there is even like a way to ignore that directory or anything like that. But yeah, it just ended up being too much of a problem. So we had to convert things. I think the biggest change that was needed was we used default props quite a bit, which you would have like your function component, and then you would add a property to it called default props. And you could, set like a default callback function or, default parameter for it. And the solution for that was just kind of moving it up to the prop destructuring. So instead of on change having a default prop, you would set on change equals, some
kind of default callback. It's literally the same functionality. It's just, kind of, you could say, bloats if you are not a fan of it, the function like signature. You're just looking at a lot more code up there, whereas when it was defaults, it was kind of tucked at the bottom how we did it.
Yeah.
But I think I prefer it up by the prompts. I don't know.
It's a little more like native JavaScript, and I think that's the reason they leaned more into that and dropped this extra property kind of thing. But in moving from React 18 to 19, we also had a bunch of the deprecated React APIs that were used, particularly in our project editor, which uses Redux and a whole bunch of things, a lot of class components in there. So stuff like string refs, context types, and even like some fine DOM node implementations were in there.
That's what you'd expect when you update a library, is that like APIs change. They get deprecated, you add new ones or whatever. So that was that. Were those rough? Oh, it was rough because
they weren't too bad. It was, you had to get out your machete and forage through these old code bases to like actually understand what they were being used for before you could just, replace it with a newer API. But in general, that wasn't too bad. So moving from 18 to 19, it wasn't wild, but it 18, took some time.
Was the prop types, we have a little AI was able to chug through some of that, wasn't it? No? I feel like that's an interesting story because I'm thinking of like when we were 17 to 18, I think AI tools were like much crappier than they are now. And as time goes on, these kind of like rote work is actually, it's gotten a lot more helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been using some of that in the next 16 conversion stuff.
Oh, yeah. We should have said that at the top of the show. That's kind of the reason we're talking about it is because of the next 16 drop. And we're just like, might as well get on it. It felt like kind of good timing for it. I guess we can just get into that. I was scared but excited that their new thing, Turbo Pack, is now the assumed default after being kind of just hinted at and, make it optional for so long. It was kind of like, really? Are you really all going to rewrite Webpack? Like, oh my gosh, the Webpack is such a beast, And I get a lot of people use Vite and stuff, but Webcat still feels like the mothership thing. If you really need a workhorse compiler thing, that Webpack still kind of did the job, but now TurboPack by default, plus we use Webpack, we do stuff in Webpack, so scary. Anyway, well, I haven't
should
even talked
be scared,
to you about it.
Chris, yeah, you should be scared.
You should be scared. Okay,
yeah,
tell me. I haven't really talked to you about this yet.
Right, so for the past day or so, day and a half, I've been trying to get Next 16 working in our app. And it just enables TurboPack. It doesn't ask you, that's the default now. It warns you when you've got like a Webpack configuration in the Next config. But it doesn't do anything to try and like migrate that over or anything like that. That immediately brought up so many problems.
Oh my gosh.
And it's been a beast to just try and like each one figure out what the issue is and then work through it hasn't been the same thing. There is fortunately a Webpack escape hatch. You can add a flag to the CLI commands to force it to use Webpack, just --webpack, and it will
Is it only in the CLI? Not that it matters. I'm sure that's how we build it too, but I think of when we make blocks for the 2.0 editor, often we're looking for not the CLI. We want programmatic call to do it. So we'll see.
No, there's not anything in like the next config that you can do. If you have the Webpack configuration in there, when you add the flag to the call,
it uses
that, fortunately. But yeah, it doesn't.
Okay.
There's no way to just enable that.
So is that the plan then? Is we're going to upgrade to Next 16 and just keep Webpack for a minute?
Yeah, because TurboPack is just introducing too much. I've got two PRs right now, one with just upgrading to Next 16 with Webpack enabled. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's around 400 changes. It's mostly little stuff. I did like a TypeScript conversion of the Next config.
That's nice.
Right. It just helps because there's now some like deprecated properties in the Next config that we got to update or reconfigure. Yeah,
so it'll give us some little yellow squiggles or whatever. Right.
So that was helpful. And then I've got a separate PR where I've been trying to get TurboPack enabled. And that right now is around 40,000 changes.
What are they? What are they really? That's wild. What, 40,000? Yeah. Is it one just absolutely enormous file, or is it?
So it's kind of all across the code base. So along with the app router is kind of server side first. Part of the reason we haven't moved our app over there is the server side first just starts running into a whole lot of problems with some of our more legacy code, particularly just the use client flag. In my opinion, that's a very strict kind of thing for just you add use state to a component and it's like, this is a client component. You can't run this on the server. And okay, that may be true. That's fine. But when you have hundreds of components using use state, now you've got to add this flag. And you can't just add it like at the top level. It's like everything that is imported at anywhere along the line that has that needs that use client flag.
So there's just a zillion files that the only change is that you put use client at the top of it.
Right. Mm. So that was at least like 700 files.
It's going to force me to actually understand it. Like I sort of baby understand it, but I think I really need to understand those little directives at the top. The part that my brain just rejects is that by putting it up there, it doesn't mean that it's not SSR friendly.
Right.
And I'm like, what? I thought that's literally what it meant. It sounds like it's literally what it means.
Yeah. I don't fully understand, what that directive causes to happen when the server side rendering is happening, but it doesn't seem to actually prevent it from rendering. So
what the Smurf?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was one area that I was able to get Cursor to help with.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because I had tried the route before back when we were looking at app router stuff. I'd tried finding all the instances of use effect and use state and adding use client to the top. And that was a huge pain. So I asked Cursor to do it, basically find use effect, use state, use ref, use external, sync external store, all of those client side ones.
And those are all client side famously, right? It's just irrelevant on the server. So
yeah, even context, create context and use context, all of those have to be client too. So after a lot of back and forth.
But it's not every file. Like what file do you not put use client on? Just anyone that just randomly happens to not be imported by another use client one and doesn't use any of these hooks?
If it's something like our badge component that's just kind of a styling kind of thing, or like the button component, it doesn't have any real hooks to it. It's just kind of a mainly there for a little bit of DOM and a little bit of styling.
Then it doesn't need it. Fine. But if a use client component uses it, doesn't it need it? Or is that not how it works? And what would, if you did put it there, would it error or would it have any negative side effects? Why doesn't every file just say use client at the top?
I don't know that it necessarily breaks anything if you just add it. But I think the idea is that those directives are able to help with like caching and like what the server knows it can render. But again, it doesn't seem to actually stop the rendering for server side rendering. So I don't know.
All right, but you're able to, you can be like, you can go into Cursor and be like, any component that uses one of these hooks, could you please put use client at the top of it? And it can just shoosh through your code base and do it. That's nice.
Shoosh is generous. It still probably took 30 minutes or so to prompt back and forth and like, you know, actually wait for it. And then it did it all, but it didn't format it how like our Prettier wants. So like I had to, you know, run Prettier over everything to
yeah I've seen that prevent. Before too, or like when it adds something, and it's kind of common in that an import is wrong too, and that happens in our Go code base too. It's like you whatever it adds some logging or something, but then it can't save the file, whereas in a Go file, if you use something like a log statement and then just hit save, it'll just go add the import for you. An AI manipulation of that file isn't like hitting Command S on that file. So
yeah.
It's not getting the thing. Okay. Well, so that's just a part of it. But, you know, it is appealing, I guess. I mean, that's why you're doing it, I suppose, is it does seem like if we get it, it's faster.
Right. I haven't seen any speed increases yet because I haven't been able to get past all the error modals. But I guess the error modals are delivered fast. That's great.
That's good, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, supposedly it will compile faster. Maybe that'll help with, like, our deployment and stuff, too. But I don't think there's, like, a client-side benefit to
really?
It, like, once it's...
Well, I think of one that I see almost every day is that Next takes a little while to compile. And by a little while, for us, it's, like, what would you say, 20 seconds or something? Only that first time that you speed up the dev environment. So if you, our dev environment, if we go to a Next-powered site right after we spin up a fresh dev environment, it's going to, what is it, not 500.
500,
it's just
yeah.
Bad gateway or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Because it takes just a little too long that our Nginx servers give up on Next. They're like, nah, I've waited long enough for you. And if this fixed that, I'd be so happy. I tried to fix this one time because you'd think you'd just be like, can't you just change the Nginx config to like wait a little longer? And it's like, you wish, buddy. It's not that easy.
No.
But so anyway, if this is the one, if that fixed just that one thing, I would be pleased.
Yeah.
That would be nice. Well, I think Next is a little slow. Remains to be seen. We'll see. If this was a 8-day job, I'd be like, no.
Yeah.
We have a bigger fish to fry here. Especially if the Webpack one works. Even that one's a little, we're not even 100% sure we can do that one yet, right?
Yeah, I haven't tested the actual deployment with that yet, but it should, in theory, work the same. But, you know, we just have to see if anything has changed Next 16 and the server side of things. But with TurboPack, like adding use client, okay, that's a pain, but we can get it done. I got it implemented. And then you just start running into other blockers. We use SAS for all of our stuff. Mm-hmm. And occasionally we need to use like global styles within the SAS. And TurboPack...
Well, global just, is like a... That's a... post or what do you call that thing, CSS modules feature, right?
I think so. But that means that TurboPack has its own implementation of that, and so you can't just directly use it in the same way. Like they only support the like function version of it, where it's colon global,
really?
And then the parentheses around a selector.
Oh, that's fun little fiddly work. So you just gotta go change the syntax of every single time we do it.
Yeah, which there's maybe like six times that we did there, six different files that had that, but you know, still just had to update that. And then Next gives new warnings about the export function. That is a cool little feature that allows us to send like variables from our SAS to JavaScript. So like we can import them so that like when we're using editor themes for the embeds, we can have those styles actually server-side rendered and served that way. But without without that, there's still like just some fiddliness that we need to get around. Unfortunately, there's no like option for that in TurboPack's CSS module handling. So,
dude, is that CSS modules too? That colon export syntax. I remember seeing that. I'm like, where did that? I'm sure you did it. It's really super useful what it's doing, but you don't. It's really uncommon to.
I don't think it's super recent. That was added. I don't think it's used all that often. There's also like a at value syntax, which does kind of the same thing, but. Either way, like TurboPack doesn't support that.
These little things are so annoying. This happened to us when we changed before. It's like we're not even upgrading versions of SAS, really. We're upgrading some other tool, which forces us to do something weird with SAS.
Yeah.
Well, we still get just enough value out of SAS to keep it probably. Yeah, it's not that bad. I just remember, God, how many we changed. We must have touched every SAS file at one point last time we did it, because it had something to do with where you place mixins
the source order. Right. That was an issue when we were going from next 14 to next 15. It was getting all these deprecation warnings about the order of properties and like how things are nested. So you can't have like class and then the properties for that class and then like add a child selector kind of in there and then more properties for the parent class.
Couldn't nest.
And so like our mixins caused problems with that, because we would just throw the mixins wherever, and the mixins might have some like child or pseudo class styles.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah, so scroll bars and all that kind of stuff, it did not like that. So we had to touch a bunch of our SAS files.
Yeah, now it's happening again.
Yeah.
And so this is you're mentioning this when we don't even know what to do yet.
Right. I haven't figured out a solution around the export stuff. The global things I figured out. It's a pain, but you know, we got that working. But export there's not another option for. So there's really only like one spot that we're using it though for embed themes. So maybe I can hack something else around it. But either way, I've just commented that out to just see what's next. Yeah. What you got for
what's
me next?
Yeah.
And it just doesn't like GraphQL. Like GraphQL files, you import
them. You import them for Apollo.
Right. You import it and you get a query or a mutation or whatever, and then you throw that into your use query.
It kind of makes sense, because that's how Webpack worked. If you're importing anything, SVG or CSS or something, you need a loader. So does TurboPack not do loaders?
TurboPack allows you. It allows you to have loaders, and supposedly you just use the same ones that Webpack uses. But I added the GraphQL loader in there exactly how they show and how some other people have written up like how to do it, and TurboPack just fails on it. It either doesn't recognize the like GraphQL exports, or it doesn't like the format of them. Either way, I have not found anything around that yet.
I just Googled it quick, and the first GitHub thread came up. It says like, just disable TurboPack.
Well, yep. Yep.
Cool. That'll fix it for sure. Funny. Yeah, I have no idea. Struggle through it. I'd be tempted to, as the just lazy sap that I've become, because I've been playing with the editor Zed, although that's irrelevant because it could be cursor or anything else. And so then you got your nice little agent buddy, and you can type in stuff that you want to happen. So you could be like, you know, hey, you know, this file's having trouble importing porting GraphQL. What would you do? You know, just see what the little agent says. You know, maybe 30% chance it's got the right answer, but hey, it's better than the 0% correct that it is now. But I'm thinking of it now, just to end this show out, that there's Next has an MCP server, which I can barely explain, but it just is like an AI. It makes your little AI machine smarter in very specific targeted ways. And I think it just teaches something like Claude Code or GitHub Copilot or whatever about Next more. So if you have questions about Next, it's now, it's not changing the context that it has, but kind of, it's just giving it more features.
It's kind of like loading the docs into the AI's model so that it just has a little more information.
But it has, I think it gives it specific APIs that it can now attempt to try now too. I don't know what they are for Next example, but I put the Chrome DevTools ones in there too. And it basically means now this AI tool can spin up Chrome and just ask DevTools stuff. It has access to the network graph. It has access to all the console and all the console errors. It has the accessibility and the DOM tree. It can just look as all kinds of context about what's going on with your app. In Next, I think that I haven't, you know, played with your branch or anything yet, but I'd be tempted to have those available in there so that it has all this extra context to root it out. Because something like a GraphQL import, that probably doesn't express itself client-side, but maybe, because it just won't even compile at all, right? And if it won't compile, then it doesn't even make it to the browser.
Next error modal in it, so you can't actually get anything.
Still, maybe I'd be like, please read the Next 16 documentation and upgrade guide and just help me, please, please, please.
Yeah. So far, nothing has turned up. Like, I think Next 16 is still just so fresh that, you know, there's not enough people out there that have run into the problem and found a solution. So,
maybe we'll 16.1, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, good luck. This we planned this show in a way to time box this, you know. It was like, let me do one day on trying to get 16 going and then we'll do the podcast. I don't think we can, I don't know, like maybe give it one more day, but like not the rest of the week, maybe, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things, like, you know, it's tempting to just add the Webpack flag and continue on, but it's also something like with the app and pages router, I just have the feeling that Next eventually is going to be like pages deprecated, Webpack support deprecated. Like they're just going to throw that gauntlet and you're going to be stuck, unless you figure out, how to migrate your app.
Mm-hmm. And then you're like, well, screw you then. I'm just going to stay on the old version. Software shouldn't mess with me. I mess with software, you know? It's a tool for me. But it's like, you can do that. You can. You don't have to upgrade if you don't want to. But then you have you have to live with the nagging feeling that the company isn't backporting security releases to it and your packages are all old and stuff. It's like they really got you by the... Is it cojones? Is that... I don't know. Like
the short ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for doing this. This is it's glamorous work, you know. But I think we'll if it all goes well, theoretically, we're in a happier place, and then we can move on to, you know, features that users care about.
Real work. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, it's a lot. All right. Take care, everybody.
Bye.